Hello, welcome to Us One Gamer. I'm your host, Rob. Welcome to Stream Streak Day 145. That's right. Oh, we should have made it like... Oh, actually, I was about to make a states thing. I don't know how many states there are. Doesn't work. Never mind. Hello, welcome to the show, everyone. I'm joined by the wonderful Matt Taylor, all the way from Texas. How are you, sir? You well?
Doing well. Doing great.
Thanks very much for getting up very early to be on the show.
Yeah, if there was ever a reason to get up early for something you enjoy doing, so Sigmar counts. I'll
yeah.
talk Warhammer with you.
Hell's yeah, it counts. Hell's yeah, it counts. Well, before we get into talking to you, which is going to be talking about Texas, which has a population larger than Australia, I just discovered. So there's some really interesting stuff there. We're going to talk about Age of Sigmar in Texas specifically is what the show is about today. But before that, I want to say thank you to everyone joining us live. Yes, Meatballs, MJ Pegasus, Propagation, what up? I hope you're all well. And I want to say a big thank you to everyone who listens to the podcast. Please stay hydrated. And of course, thank you to everyone who's working on Patreon. Couldn't do it without you. I hope you're well. Look after yourselves. So it's not as hot here in the UK as it was yesterday, which was really hot. But it's normally, we just talked a minute ago, it's normally just as hot there, Matt, right?
Yeah, we're pretty much on fire this time of year. This is literally the hottest week of the year for us.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's too hot for me. I'm just gonna. So there's loads to unpack about this subject, which I'm very much looking forward to. Matt organizes events in Texas. He's going to take us through the whole process in a moment and what that looks like. And as we stated, it's a huge area with a massive population. So it's really comparable to a country than comparable to, a small little area, for example. So I'm very much looking forward to hearing about that, especially as you don't get to hear tons about it anyway normally. Well, I don't anyway. So looking forward to doing that. Before we do, I'd like to get to know you, Matt, if that's all right. So, like, where you're based in Texas, like, what do you do? Who are you? Tell me about you.
All right. I feel like this is our first date.
Yeah.
We should hold hands. So I'm from Dallas, essentially. I'm about 30 minutes west of Dallas. And so if you don't know what Texas looks like, it basically looks like the shape of your hand. I'd be dead center, just a little bit north. I'm a physiotherapist, I think is what you guys call them in the UK. Physical therapist in the United States, it's physiotherapist in the UK. I have a couple of clinics that I own here in North Texas, and that's what I do professionally. Outside of that, I got a one-year-old, and I play Warhammer, which is weird. My wife says that I paint dolls, so I'm kind of a nerd, like we all are, I guess, if you're listening. So, yeah, that's basically me in a nutshell as far as broad strokes. I'm 32, 33.
I think my first question is what's more difficult to manage, a one-year-old or Warhammer players?
Oh, man. They're really close. At least you could tell the Warhammer player that they're bullshit, as opposed to the one-year-old who you just, you can use a couple words right now because he hasn't gotten any yet that that you probably shouldn't. But they're both pretty difficult at times. I would say that for sure. That's a good question though.
Yeah, well, I'm organizing them at the minute and I feel like it's Warhammer players, but then I don't have a one-year-old to contend with. So that's fine. I run your own business, a family and Warhammer events. That's a lot to take in. How did you start off with Age of Sigmar?
Oh, man. So I have a very similar as everyone else, sort of. So I grew up next to a mall that had a Games Workshop inside of it. And I would pass it every time I was in the mall. And go in and look, and it was all neat and cool. And I had no artistic ability at all growing up, and I had no money. So as a 12-year-old, it's really hard to get into Warhammer if your dad isn't willing to support you.
Yeah.
It would take a lot of lawns to be mowed to have an army. But I remember I had bought the rule book for the Lord of the Rings game because at that time the Lord of the Rings was in the theaters and it was a big deal, and I went home to play with Legos with my little brother, and we didn't have any idea what the actual rules were and how to do everything. I just basically made him lose every time, not even with rolling dice. I would just say you lose, because I've got this guy and you've got that guy. So that was tabletop gaming, and then always seeing the Warhammer stuff. And once I was in grad school, I was like, you know what, I'll just paint a little bit. So I grabbed like a few Chaos Warriors and a Nurgle dude and just painted like five dudes. And then like didn't do anything for forever. And I came back and I remember going into the store and be like, I've got these guys. Can I make an army? And they're like, that game's gone. It's no longer here. I was like, oh no. Okay. Well, and then Age of Sigmar had just dropped. I mean, like maybe a month before, so I guess this is almost 5 years ago. And so I picked up some Nurgle stuff and away I went. And then since that time, it's just grown as a bigger part of my life. I mean, that's basically what your hobby is. It's a part of your life. To a point now where my wife is concerned.
I think how it starts for everyone. Like, either you've been in it full time or that time when you come back to it, someone's like, are you sure you're not overcommitting to this? And you're like, But then my friend's really into cycling, super into cycling. And he turns up and he's got the bike that with the shoes that clip in. He's got the whole outfit. He looks like, you know, he looks like Hal from, what is that show? Malcolm in the Middle, when he's going speed racing and when he's speed walking. He looks terrible, but he's really, really excited by it, and it makes me laugh. So I guess whatever, you know, gets you excited is good. What is it that made you pick up Nurgle first time?
Oh, well, that's the funny story, is that I grabbed Nurgle. The Glotkin was what did it. I thought this was this cool model that looks so unique, and he's big and bad, and to this day, I have about 10 boxes of Nurgle in my closet that have not been opened. It's kind of like my coup de grace army, like the army that I wanted to work up to. I had gotten a starter set for Khorne when I first started. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to practice with these guys, like make them look decent so that I can learn something. And then I'll start Nurgle. Oh, was I wrong? I've got about 4,000 to 5,000 points of Khorne now. And I really want to do Nurgle. It seems like every time I was almost done. So I had done all of Mortal Khorne, and I was ready to put them on the shelf and pick up the next army. And then the rules for summoning came out. So there's like, you can't even play Khorne that you just spent all this time until you have something to summon. So then I started painting demons. And then painted demons, and then as soon as I was basically done painting my bloodthirsters and bloodletters that I could summon, then it was the skull altar and the judgments that I now needed to paint. And it just has every time I'm almost out of Khorne and starting Nurgle, they pull me back in. So at this point now, I wanted to do a quick OBR to just have something that I could play that was completely different outside of the Chaos Gods. I've got half of that done, but the goal is in the next 6 to 12 months to literally sit down and do Nurgle, which I like, because I like to convert, and they would kind of be a painting showcase army for me.
Okay, right. So I guess that's the next question, really. Also, as we're talking, I am painting up some Plague Bearers, but not to a standard that anyone would like. I'd like everyone to know that. It's just something for my hands to do while I talk. So the question is, so when you started out, like, new, and obviously, because where this story is going, obviously, is Matt runs these really large events. It's a very specific set of events in Texas. So that's what we're going to be talking about when we get to it. But, you know, your experience, especially with the start of Age of Sigmar, where there was no points, etc., when did it move into events for you, at least playing, or did you go straight into organizing?
You know, I'll be honest. I was so, I don't know if nervous is the right word, but I was so standoffish about actually entering into any type of community, because this was outside of anything that I had done in the past. I've had people consistently tell me that I don't look like your normal player. And everybody that I knew prior to getting into wargaming is kind of like, what do you do? Why are you doing this? And so I didn't actually play a game until I had 2,000 points of Khorne painted. And at the time, it was even more so Slaves of Darkness, and went to a tournament just to see what it was. I didn't even know if I was gonna like the game, but I was so I didn't want to be the guy who showed up in you know, plastic. So I played, and I've always been competitive with everything, whether it be sports or board games or whatnot, just like most of us who are in the competitive scene. And so once I started with that, I just started playing tournaments and started becoming more part of the community and meeting good people. Then it became to a point where I was running a local tournament a couple times a year, you know, with a couple other guys who would do it. We would try and do one a month. And then from there, I started meeting other people within our state who were also doing the same thing in their local communities. And then it just kind of has crescendoed into kind of herding cats in a way of getting a system in place where now everybody in all these different cities across of our state can participate in something even bigger, to where it's now, you know, running tournaments that are 100 plus.
That's
kind of where we're at.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I'd like to hear more about that, like, as we go through. I guess my question is, so after you played that event, you know, and you are competitive, but you still obviously put the time in on the painting. Do you think that there's some delineation between, like, the tiers of competitiveness? Like, that, you know, we do know that there are guys who just turn up to events to have a bit of a laugh. Would you put yourself there, or would you put yourself in, you analyze stuff, you think this will be a good thing? Or, as I know is already true, you just throw caution to the wind and you take a rubbish army like corn.
It always gives me like a single tear when I hear you talk about corn, because the love of bloodthirsters is so small with the Honest Wargamer, and I couldn't agree with you more. Bloodthirsters are not the way to go if you're playing corn, if you want to be competitive, in my opinion. Not that you can't win with them, people do. It's just hard, and you got to hope you have some good matchups. I would say I'm definitely the competitive side of it. Now, I've never played a game with plastic. I put a lot of time into my hobby because that's, I don't know, part of it for me. But if I couldn't do anything with these models and I was just painting them to put on my shelf, there would be no Warhammer for me. I get the most fulfillment out of a 2-day weekend and playing 5 games and having high levels and high degree of competition. There's nothing better. I think that's the most enjoyable Warhammer for me. I love the you know, laid back version too, where you can have a beer and enjoy time with your mate. But I have my most memorable games are not necessarily the ones that are just meant to be fun. They're the ones that went down to the final turn and the final dice roll against a good player who understood why you were competitive because he was the same way.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I think that's fair. I see a sports picture in the background there. Like, do you? Did you? Yeah, I'm not sure what.
Yeah, I've got a stadium behind me. That's where I went to college. So I played football throughout high school and college. I was an athlete growing up. I had no specific tabletop gaming skills until I got a wife, and I guess I felt like, hey, I can be a weird nerd without having to hide it. from women.
Well, my question is that with sports as a background of yours, coming into like tournament Warhammer, competitive Warhammer, do you feel that there was a lot that could be done to professionalize, I think is the right word, or maybe like formalize some of the gaming that happened? Is that something that you felt was needed, or did that already exist in your community?
Yeah, no, I mean, so we always had a kind of a consistency within our community of tournament rules were kind of consistent month to month when we would have our local tournaments. But I always hated the ones where you could tell that if a TO was running it, they had not put in the time and effort to think through certain rules that had just come out that may be particular to that tournament. Maybe they're putting battle plans on the to their list for the weekend, or maybe even for that day, that didn't make a whole lot of sense competitively. I really just, it's one of those things you just kind of just, you know, nod your head and say, okay, well, I'll just make the best of it. But yes, especially when we're talking about people across the entire state, some type of formal set plans in place, a rule book, a rubric, was definitely necessary, because if not, it would have never worked. You needed something more consistent. and
So,
and laid out so that way people
yeah,
kind of understood where they were.
so tell me what it is you guys organize and how it came to be.
Sure. 2 years ago, yeah, just about 2 years ago, myself and John Napick, who is one of the founders of the Ever Chosen podcast with Jeremy Cooper, who you know and have
Great
spoken
guy.
to a couple times about Theraphon, yeah. We just kind of started brainstorming about what would it look like if we tried to get not only our local communities more invigorated about tournaments, but also conjoining that into other cities. And so we started developing a kind of a scaled rubric on how you acquire points to kind of rank yourself across the state. And then if you were to acquire enough points, you could be invited to an end of year Masters event with the top 20 in our state to vie for our Masters champion. Once we did that, we kind of laid it out on how it would work. Essentially, you get 5 scores throughout about a 9-month window from February to November. And the scores are based upon participation within that tournament and how well you do. So everything that you play in is classified as a local tournament, unless it's 2 days. And then if it's 2 days, the Masters Council, which there's about 9 of us who sit on basically kind of this, I don't know,
Board.
fake board, yeah, I guess is the best way to put it, on if it qualifies for a grand tournament. So right now, the way we do it is we have 4 major cities in Texas. There's Dallas, Austin, San Antonio, and Houston. Those are the 4 primary. And each one of those cities has a gaming group. So Dallas is the Defenders of the Citadel, which is interesting. It's an interesting name considering that we don't actually participate much with the Citadel because this is where the North American hub would be for Games Workshop.
Oh yeah, you
They
guys have
put
got
it's
the yeah, you guys have got the thing.
yeah. So I live in Grapevine, Texas, which is my home is about 5 minutes away from the Citadel. Now, I got into wargaming well before that was ever announced to come here. It was just kind of one of these huge things like, oh my God, they're going to bring this, Warhammer world, and it's going to be down the street from me. And it's a great place with good people. But they were not very receptive to our competitive environment. They
Even
just
recently.
It's been better over the past year.
Okay.
But we tried to run a few tournaments there through them, and they did not go very well. We had a guy that went 0-5, get 3rd place out of a 40-man field. So
Wow.
that tells you something about
Because
what they ran.
of because of soft scores, right? It would have been because of painting and sports
Painting
votes.
and sportsmanship, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, hey, that's great. We think that should be incorporated at a point into many tournaments, but if you can not win a game and still podium, something's wrong. So it didn't work out. And our gaming group is still called the Defenders of the Citadel, even though, we don't actively participate through those guys as much as we would have liked to. We've got a great store down in North Texas called Texas Toy Soldier, who one of our friends bought, and so we are supporting him, Brian Henderson. But each city has its own gaming group. The Sons of Slambo in San Antonio, you may hear
I've
their
heard of
chants
those
when you,
guys. I've heard of those
yeah.
guys. Yeah.
Yeah, so Dan Norris is kind of the fearless leader down there. And then we have the Austin Weird Knobs and the Grand Alliance Houston. So we have 4 gaming groups in each of the 4 major cities. And each of those groups runs a major tournament once a year. So it's basically like golf or tennis, where you've got 4 majors during the year, one in each city. Those are worth more points. So if you do well in those, you get more points. And then anything other than that that's run locally, you have a point cap. So after the end of the year, you take your top 5 scores and you see if you qualify. You get extra points in your city ranking. So we have a state ranking and a city ranking. Your city ranking is you versus everyone that's in your gaming group. And you get extra points towards that ranking if you travel. So, like, let's say I live in Dallas, but then I go play in a 1-day tournament down in Austin. I get extra points to my city ranking, not my state ranking. And what that basically does is we make it so that no matter where you are in the state, if you finish top three in your city, it's an automatic invite to the end of the year tournament. So it incentivizes all this community travel, and you start to make connections with people outside of your local stores. So when we do have these grand tournaments throughout the year, you kind of know everybody because you've taken some time to maybe go down for a one-day event. They've taken time to come up to some of your locals. So you really have this unique kind of collective environment where normally, you know, you would never see someone who's 3 hours away or 4 hours away.
Yeah, grassroots, right? I think that is so the way to go. I'm really convinced on that as a process. And it sounds, number one, sounds awesome. And you guys obviously like are building something very special there. That's what it sounds like to me anyway. And I like the level of organization and structure that obviously goes into that. It sounds exciting because I think one of the things that as you know, I'm deeply excited and fascinated about A, event Warhammer, and B, like it being a sport and how that kind of transitions and relates. And one of the reasons we created the Super Series or we invented the T-Sports Network was effectively to like create like a structure or a system that other people could replicate wherever they were if they weren't. What's awesome is you guys have already got this in place in like a singles format for you guys. And I think that sounds so exciting because like now I just want to move there and just like go to all the different cities and play. Like there are also, do the different cities have, so there are four cities, you go to the majors or you go to the events. And obviously this culminates in a masters, which we haven't talked about yet. And I would like to ask, but do the cities have any like styles? Are there any like faint, like, you know, strategy, like, you know,
yeah, so the two biggest cities here in Texas are Houston and Dallas. So they have the most numbers. So the Defenders of the Citadel in Dallas and Grand Alliance Houston tend to have the most people who are at the events as far as percentage-wise. Austin are the Weird Knobs, and then the San Antonio Sons of Slambo. And San Antonio is kind of like the OGs. They were the first to have a gaming group years ago. I don't even know how long it's been, but they have – they have cuts like you would see in a motorcycle gang, essentially. And they have roles like you would see that there's a president and a VP and a, you know, a master at arms and this whole thing. So you actually have to work up. I'm sure I'm butchering it to a certain extent. Sorry, Dan, but you have to work up to your nickname or to your role within San Antonio. So they're probably, I would say percentage-wise, maybe our least competitive gaming group, but probably our most fun. They're the ones who are chanting in the halls and ensuring that you're drinking beer and those guys. So everybody has kind of like their own style, I would say. Austin has a really low amount of percentage points as far as number of people playing, but there's always like five of them that are top-notch. It's like they take the cream of the crop and they bring them to tournaments, and they always do well. They actually, at our Masters event, we do a war for Texas, which basically means at the end of the year, we need to crown one of the gaming groups as the best in Texas. And we rank them off of how they do at major tournaments. So we take your top three scores at a tournament and we take that average. So if you got someone who's got fourth, fifth, and 10th, you know, that 19 total points is what you acquired. Your average would be 6 point something. And we rank that against other gaming groups. So if the top three in Dallas best the top three in Houston and San Antonio and Austin, then Dallas is crowned the group winner of that event. And so if you look on our website, you'll see a map of the state. It's the first thing that pops up and it's color coded to which gaming groups have claimed that territory. And at the end of the year, the group with the most territories is the War for Texas winner. And you get a big old giant sequitur mace. And so right now, Houston is the reigning champs from our 2019 season. But yeah, there's a little bit of a niche between all of our groups.
That sounds awesome. I love the idea of taking someone's territory as well. Like,
it's very cool. You get so I kind of go into more like a little bit. So there's 13 territories.
Okay. And so, tell me everything.
Yeah, well, there's 13 territories.
Yeah.
And you essentially get a territory if your person from your group wins a GT. So you just got to have that one guy who goes the distance on that GT and wins it. So there you claim that territory. You get a territory if your gaming group had the best overall finish of its top three. So that claims your territory. And then the same thing works at the end of the year for the Masters event. But for the Masters event, we didn't want to make it just a 20-man tournament in a little venue hall where it feels so exclusive. So what happens is the top 20 in the ranking systems get invited, and we backfill in if someone can't make it. But we didn't go very far. I think out of our 20, I think 24 were invited. So only four weren't able to make it. And some of those that weren't able to make it play in the sister event that is ran in the same hall and at the same time, which is the doubles event. And anybody can sign up. So you have 20 people running a singles tournament on this side of the hall, and you've got another 40 to 60 on the other side of the venue hall who are running doubles tournament. It's the doubles tournament, which is, of course, more laid back and just enjoying basically our culmination of our what we would classify as our Super Bowl. And that has the ability to acquire territory as well in the doubles event. So we have all these kind of ways that each gaming group is trying to claim territory in Texas throughout the year. And then at the end of the year, at the end of the Masters event, we crown our champion. And then everybody talks shit about him for a whole year until we can claim it back.
That honestly, that sounds fascinating. The guys in the chat, I think, are having a great time with it. All 13 realms in the realm of humidity. I think that's correct. Or is it like a dry heat there? I'm not sure.
It is humid as can be. We, you walk out the door and you can expect to just immediately start just sweating through whatever you've got on you. It's warm. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So technically, you could win Texas. That's an amazing given geographically. The state of Texas is three times the size of the UK and has about the same population. So I guess that's the next question. Like, so what are the size of these events? Well, like what, like the little one-dayers, the two-dayers, how big are they?
So our one-dayers, we're obviously limited to the size of our gaming stores. And it's pretty unique because what we do, every city runs a local about once a month. Some cities like Houston will run two a month because they have multiple gaming stores and it's a big enough area that they'll have enough participation. But to kind of give you an example, everybody who plays in Dallas knows that on the first of the month at 8 p.m., our Eventbrite link goes live and there's only 18 to 20 slots. We usually sell out those 20 slots within 5 minutes. You better be at your computer ready to sign up immediately or else you're just going to miss out on that month's local. The grand tournaments throughout the year, we average pretty close to 100. WarGamesCon was our biggest. That was ran in August/July, depending on the year. This year was kind of, so to kind of give you some perspective, we tried to do a two-day tournament through the Citadel in 2019. It didn't go very well. So this year I've taken over to not only run the Masters event, but run the grand tournament here in Dallas. We opened up registration in February of this year before all the craziness hit. I capped it at 90 and we were at 84 within a few hours. And then what was, to kind of give you an example of how great our community is here, COVID hit. And everything just got blown to hell. And so all of our events this year have been canceled. And as you know, probably tenfold from what I'm doing as an event organizer, especially if it's the first event that you're going to be running, your startup costs are extremely high with no guarantee that you're going to be making anything or even breaking even that year or next year. So I bought all these mats and I had purchased all this terrain from Dark Fantastic Mills and we had we had printed a lot of terrain, and we had, you know, a great collective of guys helping me kind of put some things together. And then it got canceled, and I basically just sent out a notification of, hey, we were going to cancel the Lone Star Grand Tournament, which is going to be in May. And if you wanted a refund, that's great. If you don't want a refund, as long as, you know, we are able to save face a little bit with the Lone Star Grand Tournament so that we can run it next year, we're going to pass out some mega gargants once they actually get released. And I think I only had three guys not ask for a refund, or that asked for a refund. I had 95% of those registered say, keep the money, I'll see you next year, which is amazing. I mean, it basically makes it so that I can break even this year and have an even better event in 2021.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. That level of support.
It was really cool. It was really cool. I got some lovely, lovely lads here in Texas.
That's good, because that's not like that's not what I expect. I feel like they're six shooting at the table and like riding in on horses. Obviously, that's
tumble,
wrong.
As the tumbleweed, you know, rolls by, and you got to pick it off the dice table. Hey, you know,
can I just tell you that like. The priority role in a Texas Age of Sigmar events must be, for me, the most amazing, like, just two guys, corn in their mouth, they're chewing, just dice, ready to rock, first one to throw.
Make sure we have the high-pitched whistle behind us before we roll, too, yeah.
Yeah, only roll at noon. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's awesome though of your community to do such a thing. I know everyone in the chat is laughing because we keep saying community a lot, but it is the best part about Warhammer, pretty much, and the Age of Sigmar community specifically is brilliant wherever we end up going. And I think it's particularly phenomenal just how large it is, your community, really, like over that area. And I think it's a fun to see.
Yeah,
go on, FT.
I think we had, I want to say, over 300 participants in our first year running Masters. As far as people who had gotten ranked throughout the year, the end event, the top 20 made it. But for our first year running it with no previous history, there's a lot of people who didn't even know it was going on throughout most of the year because we were trying to, you know, get the word out through Discord and through our website and things like that. But I would have expected this year to just be insane with the amount of participation that was building from people who had gotten in late and weren't able to participate from the beginning of the season and that kind of stuff, that we're really looking forward to a fresh start where everyone's on an even playing field. So we're looking forward to when we can kind of ramp all this back up again.
So when do you start your season? Does it start like post GHB or beginning of the year?
No, we have our biggest Masters event at the end of January, and then February 1st, any tournament thereafter counts. And that's the cool thing, too, is that I'm not regulating who can submit scores to be ranked and who can be voted on. So basically, the only rule is that you have to run a tournament-style event where it has to be three games, and there has to be at least eight people at that event. You could do this at any part of the state, wherever you wanted to, as long as you met those two requirements. Then you submit your scores, and your scores are based off of participation. So if you have a 20-man event versus an 8-man event, they're scored differently. But you can still max score the same. So if you score first in a 20 and first in a 8, you're not penalized. You still get the max points. But if you get second, then it's a significant difference in third and so on and so forth. But that's the cool thing, is that we'll have guys submitting scores as a tournament organizer from cities that, you know, we haven't really had much communication with.
Yeah.
There is a bit of an honor system, but I can't imagine someone posting false scores with random names and thinking that it wasn't going to be at least found out eventually. And realistically, you cannot qualify for the Masters event if you don't go and do well at the grand tournaments, because they're worth so much more.
In points, yeah. It's an interesting thing, actually, like, just thinking the world over. I wonder if it, like, because LVO obviously happens at the end of January as well. CanCon also happens at the end of January. So, like, some of these really large, major, like, Age of Sigmar events kind of, like, culminate at the end of January. And I don't know if it's just by happenstance or if there was something that happened at one point. Because
here's Here's the reason why. So we did it in January. Is one, don't try and do it during the holiday season. Your participation levels will be severely limited. Two, if you can, and I think almost all the tournaments in January, do it the week before the Super Bowl because there are no sports at all of any type. No one's typically on vacation because you just spent a bunch of money on Christmas. So you can usually convince these guys 3 or 4 weeks after Christmas, hey, there's no football on TV, or I guess it would be American football. There's nothing on TV. You're not going to go out and go to, Mexico for the week. Come play some Warhammer because there's nothing else better to do. So that's my reasoning for January.
Yeah, it's just a weird happenstance, right? And coincidence, but it's nice to see that because obviously my thoughts are to run seasons GHB to GHB. That kind of makes sense, like July to July, at least for tracking stats. Well, that's what me and LLV did for stat tracking as well for tournament coverage, because it seemed to make, the kind of most sense to go with the flow of the game. My mic is a little crackly. Oh, is it been the whole time?
Yeah, you've been a little cracky.
I'm sorry about that, everyone. That's the first time I found out about it, like halfway through the show. I'll see if I can do something about it. So, are there any famous players in Texas? Who are the legends? I hear you are. You're a bit of a. Let me get this right. You are the top player in Dallas. Is this right?
So we had quite a few guys who were angry that I did not participate in the Masters event at the end of last year because I was running it as a TO. At the time, I was ranked first in the state. That doesn't mean I'm the best player in the state. It just means that I went to all the grand tournaments and did well at that given year. Obviously, that can change. We've got great players like everywhere. We don't have the names of the Ben Savas and that kind of thing. I think that are notorious at this point, but I would say if you put me on the table or a handful of other guys who are consistently good finishers, we would give just as much run a run for your money as anyone else. Just like everybody else, we've got some guys who need some help and they need to kind of rethink their strategy at points or their army or whatever, but yeah, we've got some pretty hard hitters. Matt Robish is our 2019 champ. He ran Daughters of Cain. Imagine that. They just never seem to fail over the past few years, and he was our 5-0 winner from the Masters event this past year. Jeremy Cooper finished top 10 at the Masters. You know him. Marco Hernandez, one of the other ever chosen guys, plays great Warhammer. We've got some pretty rough guys, Zachary Kennedy and Gavin Grigar down in Houston. There's kind of like each city's got about a few guys, 2 to 5, that you're just like, man, I really hope I don't play them because it's going to be a rough time. So yeah, there's a kind of an inner meta between Texas, and I think that's part of it too, is because we have all these great events and this great scoring system and this kind of an incentive to do well within our state. There's less incentive to have to travel, I don't know, across the country to go to something. I want to go to Adepticon and LVO like anybody else, but I don't feel like I'm really missing out too much because I have such a great system around me. So I get to do some pretty big events every year that, are really fun.
I think, hearing in the chat from PR Eco Saint, let me know how my mic is. If it gets worse, I'll try and sort it. He's saying that you play a sub-tier army really in Korn, so the fact that you're doing well is excellent. So good.
I would love to have a Korn Mortals conversation with whoever was out there that thinks they're sub tier. I think they are OP. I think I get to cheat when it's another show maybe, but
Yeah, all
I
right.
love it though because everybody underestimates it, and I'm like, and then we play, and they're like, "What the hell?" And I'm like, "I know, I keep telling people, and no one listens." So,
Well, no, don't worry. There are. I know there's Owen. Let's do a Korn show. You, me, Owen, we'll just talk corn for until we're done, and we'll convince the world of it. Because I know, for instance, this weekend over in New Zealand, AOS Tubbs, so Sean Tubman, has just gone 5-0 at the team event that we spoke about with Aiden the other day with his carriage and overlords. And I asked him about it, and he said it's just because everyone else is rubbish at Warhammer, but they're very good.
I'm really subpar, but everybody else here in Texas is just god awful. So I really feel like I'm king of the mountain, is what it is. No, I didn't mean that. You guys are great.
No, don't worry about it. I mean, we all have our own opinions on the different factions, right? So it is what it is. So leading into, how have you guys been coping with COVID? Like, and have you guys put the season on hold? What's the plan?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it's basically a scrap season. All of our four grand tournaments have been canceled because of COVID. So it's been one of those just kick you in the nuts years where you had all this momentum building into the next season, and then you just kind of get to do it nothing. So outside of that, we still have communication lines within our Discords between all the major cities. So there's still lots of shit talking, and there's still lots of, you know, guys showing off what they've been painting because there's nothing else to do. But like most individuals, if there's not something to paint for, it's hard to spark that, you know, that you sit down at the table and start putting some work in until you've got, you know, because who knows? I mean, we may not even have significant tournaments until after the winter points update, you know, and you'd hate to paint up this 2,000 point army that you really love because it fits just right, and then it all goes to hell because of an FAQ or points change. So everyone, I can feel, myself included, is kind of reluctant to start really, you know, diving in and digging deep on their hobby without some type of incentive. But for me, it's been a great time to build terrain. I mean, I've just been building and building and building terrain to lead up into our next GT next spring.
Yeah, I think I understand that. I was thinking that recently. I was thinking about a roadmap for what I wanted to paint next, and I was like, does it matter? Like, like, I know I'm organizing the Super Series, but I'm not playing. So I'm like I'm like, those guys have got to paint stuff. They're excited. They can do what they need to do. I'm commentating. That's not my bag at the minute. So I'm a little bit, I'm in the same boat, and I can understand actually why a lot of people are in that kind of same boat, especially the competitive community, because if there's nothing to work towards, then, you know, they kind of they pull their heels back. So a question for you is, because I think some people would love to hear this from you, like, do you have a suggestion for counties, states, countries on how they could best organize something like this for themselves, or how they could start to organize it? You said you use Discord. Is there, like, is that a good place to start? Like, yeah. How do you do it?
Discord was vital for us. Without Discord, to be able to have consistent community interaction amongst many different topics. I mean, there's people in there all the time talking about things that are outside of Warhammer. But that consistency, you made it so that you knew the other people that were around you. So that way you could, you know, organize an event with someone who you didn't usually have contact with. Or you could talk about putting together a series with somebody that is from a different city that's far enough away that you would typically not go and participate in. That was huge. I had another point. I would also say that we have a council. So the ability to get on the council is really simple. If you help run a major tournament in Texas, a 2-day grand tournament in Texas, you're on the council. Done. Like, that's all it takes. If you're willing to put in the time and effort to put your money on the line, or your time on the line, or whatever it is, you're in that little select group. And that group's great because we got one guy who's a graphic designer, so he does all of our graphics. We've got guys who are skilled with IT, you know, help with the website. I'm kind of the website guy at the moment. So having kind of a group collective of community organizers, they all kind of come together, was the biggest part, where I could say, hey Dan, or hey John, or hey Kyle, or whoever, let's do this thing. And we kind of bounce ideas off of each other, and they're they're well established within their local community to say, yeah, that sounds good, let's do that, and then their communities will support them.
Yeah. Okay. So number one, step one, find like-minded people who are good at stuff.
Yes.
Good. All right. That's good. But what if you don't know how to, like, I suppose the thing with Discord is you can start to build that community, right? Like,
right,
straight off the bat. I guess you have to also go to events. It's going to be really hard for people to maybe develop those connections right now. But maybe just take to being online and posting in groups and chats. And it takes a lot. I can understand what you said at the start, where you were talking about, you know, the confidence to go to events as well. That sometimes takes a bit of an issue, especially nowadays, especially to be part of something now when going outside is a danger. That's an issue. So I could see that being a thing. Any other advice?
No, I think that's pretty much it. I mean, really look to the TOs who ran local tournaments around your community, if you can find them. Those are the guys who typically have a decent head on their shoulders most of the time, who are willing to put in the time and effort to work with you or to build a community. You know, I think without those Warhammer heroes who are really growing your community by making sure people are interacting and kind of letting it, that's the greatest thing, is that when I first started here in Dallas, I went to a tournament and we had like 7 guys, and that was the consistent every month. It was like 7 dudes or 8 dudes. And then once we got to a point where we kind of got our system in place, we're like, hey, go on the Discord. We could tell someone who was brand new to start interacting there. And then all of a sudden it's just grown organically. You didn't have to like fight for new blood and, oh, you should play, or, oh yeah, buy this army so you can, you know, get into this tournament with us. It was basically, hey, if you're not ready to sign up for this tournament at this day on this time, you're not going to get in. And that was just mind blowing to be like, okay, now we're too big, or like, now we're so big we don't have room. So that's been really cool.
So where can we find out, like, in the future? Let's say I want to track, because I do. I want to track and find out about everything that's happening in Texas. Also, who owns Texas right now, and this sort of information. Where can I find that all out?
TheTexasMasters.com. And that's going to have everything you need to know about current rankings, who owns the state currently, where our majors are, what our scoring system is. It's got everything you and more as far as our history and who's won previous events. So TheTexasMasters.com.
Okay. Well, that's I'll include that in the show notes for everyone below, so you guys can get, like, join that. Is there other than that? Is there, I suppose there's links to socials and stuff on there for me to go for.
Yeah. So all of our gaming groups are on there. And then if it has most of our gaming groups have a Discord, there's a link to that Discord. I mean, it's really like the central hub where you can find all the information you may need to know, to get into the Texas scene and see what we're doing.
Okay. Awesome. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you about all of this. Do you think there's anything we left out? I think we've talked about all the big players and the state and how it works. Is there anything you think we need to cover that we might have missed? I don't want to have missed anything, is the key part.
No, I think that's the kind of the gist of it. I mean, there's obviously specifics, and you guys can find that on the website if you need to. But yeah, Texas is a great place to be if you want to be a competitive Age of Sigmar player. We're getting pretty lucky down here. It's a pretty special community.
Yeah, no, it's honestly, it sounds incredible. Like, I know for a fact that there's a lot of interstate rivalry, for instance, between everyone. I'm really conscious of how crackly my mic is, so I don't want to talk too much. But there's a lot of interstate rivalry, for instance, in Australia. I know that tends to be true. I know the Swedish guys think everyone in the north is mental. So it's really fun hearing about these kind of different these different, like, states and or different countries and how they all kind of, thanks Owen, and how they all interact. In England, for instance, you've got guys like, you've got different communities, right? So you've got like South London Legion, they're like an area and a community, and then you've got the Just Play guys, and they always turn up and they're very teamy, and they've got WS10 guys, and like, they've got their thing, but we've never formalized anything into anything.
And you always assume that your meta is better than their meta because, you know, you somehow play Warhammer better because you live in this place or whatever. So you always assume that whatever country or whatever sect or city is like, Oh yeah, well they're good, but you know we've obviously got the best players here for some random reason. So obviously, like anywhere else, you've got good players and bad players everywhere you go.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Unless you're in Australia, obviously, because all of Australia is currently owned by New Zealand because they've lost both of their two major. Both, it's true. Both of their last two major events was if you were to do it via that, New Zealand owns Australia right now, which is all messed up for those guys.
I'm sure they've played the little brother for long enough, so they should really soak this this time in.
Yeah, they should. I think they're loving it. They're living for it as well.
Yeah,
which is really
I would love it. That'd be great.
I would like to develop more rivalry between like both countries, like states, like players. I think that that's a really fun element as well. I'd love to like find out more about those players and what they've run, especially like in your community, because I'm always interested in, especially like someone like yourself. Like I know both a couple of one of the Greek guys and also one of the Swedish fellas, Magnus, all huge fans of Mortal Korn, and whenever they turn up to events they play super well with Mortal Korn. Like we almost saw Beast of Chaos Korn take out the, because the Greek fellas came over to an English GT at Warhammer World, and he went 5-1 and not 6-0, like, and he lost on the last game, so that would have been a huge upset. But you don't remember it because they didn't win. And that's one of the things about tracking some of these results sometimes, is you really start to go on after you.
No, it's great. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest things you love about going to a major tournament here in Texas is that, yeah, you're rooting for yourself, but you're on the same team, because remember, you're vying for your top three from your group to win the territory. So you may finish your game, and it's not just that you want your buddy to win. Like, you're really hoping he wins, because then your gaming group gets elevated and you can talk shit. And then, yeah, you kind of just have this natural rivalry between all these gaming groups, and everybody's got their own shirts, and Slambo's got their chant, and it's just, I mean, it's growing consistently to a point now where I wouldn't put it past some of these guys to have some tattoos here sooner than later.
Yeah, no, I'm into that. That works for me, definitely. And also, I think one of the... I found out what's the thing where you park outside of a sports venue? Tailgating. I've never done that. I heard about it when I was over in Nashville, and now I want to tailgate a Warhammer event. I don't know what that means.
Well, shit, yeah, man. That'd be awesome. I mean, that's basically... all it is you just bring food and beer, and you just get completely wasted before the event starts. And then when the event starts, you're loving life. So, yeah, tailgating's great.
Good. All right, well, I'm in. I'll do that one day over in Texas. I'm up for that. So I promise I'm going to include all the links below, so you can find out everything that you want to find out about. Matt, I'd love to have you back on so we could talk Mortal Korn. And you know, I'll just listen, because I don't have anything useful to contribute other than they suck.
Any time, because I'd love to blow your mind. I think Mortal Korn is extremely undervalued, and I'm not being, you know, I'm not bullshitting. It's pretty crazy sometimes if you just sit down and look at it.
All right, yeah, no, I'm in. I really am. So we'll organize that, definitely. So thank you for being on the show, and obviously check out the link in the show notes below, please do. Big shout out to everyone who has joined us live. So Owen, MJ Pegasus, JP, Aegis Sedmar, I hope you're all well. Thank you to everyone who's listened to the podcast. Please stay hydrated. And thank you to everyone that was working on Patreon. You got any shout outs you want to give, Matt? I mean, the whole thing's been a shout out, but any specific shout outs?
Just the council. You know, those guys are great. I couldn't be confident in putting any of this together or doing anything without the support from the guys from the other communities, leading their communities by being a TO. So for those guys, and they know who they are, there's too many to name, but I really appreciate the council, and then of course everybody in our community who's supported us along the way.
Yeah, perfect. All right, well, yeah, thanks again for being on the show. I appreciate it tons. Big shout out to everyone else. Have a great day. Look after yourselves, and I'll see you soon. Bye.